Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police departments. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75, 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Ah!
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I will be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there and looking for jobs, that's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you... Sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done.
Hmm.
I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
All right. Let's get into what we wanted to get into yesterday, but I've added another part on, so maybe yesterday's interruption served a purpose. Okay, today's podcast is titled Mission 6521 and Battery-Powered Houses. Mission 6521 and Battery-Powered Houses. Now, what is Mission 6521? It's based on, and although we're not churchy around here, but it's based on Isaiah 65:21. And it's a simple sentence: we shall build houses and live in them. So thus, we came up with Mission 6521, and that's about as religious as we get, because we want to have a practical boots-on-the-ground experience with Mission 6521, where we're actually teaching people how to build houses that they can live in or they can rent them out. The choice is yours. And what type of houses, now, we didn't have this 24 hours ago, but what type of houses shall we be building? They will be battery-powered houses. Now, I'm going to play an audio, that I played on here, because Zillion Times illustrates primarily for the new people listening, because I know the old people, once you hear the first sensitive, you've heard it 100 times already. But a battery-powered house, think about it this way. Your cell phone is a battery-powered telephone. And we know we can charge it up, and you know, the newer phones that you get, like the phone I have, which I got last December as a holiday present, I get a good 6 to 8 hours out of this phone off of one charge. Depends on, you know, what I watch or listen to or read. Because depending on the function, you know, it draws more power on the phone. But let's put it at 7. I probably get about 7 hours of use off of one charge, off of the smartphone that I have. All right, which is double of what I used to get with other phones. So now, and then of course, a lot of people, they use the phone all day, and then at night they put it on the charger, and then in the morning when they wake up, the phone is charged, ready to go again. This phone not the phone I'm talking on right now, but because I'm on a landline, but the smartphone that I use takes maybe a little over an hour to charge up. All right. Now, it's the same with a battery-powered house. Now, Tesla's got this thing called a Powerwall, which It allows your house, you know, to be batteryized, if that, well, that's a new term. Batteryized houses. And it gets its energy, you know, from solar panels. So, and it, the sunlight, the solar panels, of course, energizes the your battery unit. But it makes you energy independent. It makes you energy independent. Right now, you've got a million or so people, I believe, in Puerto Rico, one of those islands in the Caribbean. They've had a hurricane pass through there. So you got, like, a lot of people that are without power down there because they were all, they become dependent upon the grid. Now, the grid might be owned by a municipality, you know, an incorporated town or city, or it might be owned by a private company, all right? But you don't want to be at the mercy of those if there's a natural disaster. And you've got to pay the bill. They send you a bill every month on how much power you use. But like just like with your cell phone, your smartphone, what have you, you don't get a bill every month. Well, now, technically, if you plug into grid power, you know, but the amount of juice that you're going to use to recharge your cell phone every month is minuscule. All right? So, but if when you recharge your phone, or the battery for your house, or let's start with the phone. When you recharge your cell phone, like I said, the bill, if that's all you charge, will be minuscule. It might mean $5 a month or whatever. All right. Now, the same principle, you can become energy independent with a, I'm calling it, if you batteryize your house, and that, you know what? Battery rise. Okay, you know, I'm going to play around with that. I'll get back to you in a few on that. But when you battery rise your house, the battery, you know what, let me work on that. Battery rise your house. Essentially, that's where you want to go. So I'm going to play an audio that I've played on here several times, but you want to have your home. Like you see, if you don't like to receive an electric bill or a water, well, let's talk about the electric bill right now. All right. Well, you run your TV and your fans and whatever you use electricity for in your home. You want to, I suggest that you batteryize your house and have your house run off of batteries, just like your cell phone. Your cell phone, you do not get a bill from your local municipality if they supply you with electricity. You do not get an electric bill with your cell phone. All right? You do not, if it's a private company, you know, you don't get a bill for that. Now, like most people, but like, say, If you all you did was plug it in the grid, it'll be a friendly low bill. But I recommend people get off of the grid, and if you're not on the grid, don't even get on it. And if you're going to have a house, and this is like, say, with Tesla, he's got the power wall. That's what he calls his system. But you can put together your own power wall. You can put together your own power wall, and then your house will run off of batteries. There's some people, and they have YouTube videos on this, where you can run your house, you can power your home off of your car battery. Now, just go on YouTube and just put in any search engine or put in any search engine at all, powering house power or powering your house with your car. And you'll see the articles that pop up, and on YouTube you'll see some videos of this. So part of Mission 6521, which is based on Isaiah 6521, which that I'm paraphrasing, but essentially it says, build your houses and live in them. So that's what we'll be teaching people. You can build them for two reasons. You can either build it to live in it or build it to rent it out. Build it up as a, build it as an asset. You don't have to live in it, but build it up, build it as an asset and then rent it out. You know, any kind of expense or expenditure that you want to spend money on, build another one to underwrite the cost of whatever your new expense might be. All right. And to get the best value out of a house, make sure you batteryize your house and the house runs on battery. I'm going to play Solar Cabin because Solar Cabin, what Lamar Alexander is talking about here, is a batteryized house. He mentioned solar, but solar panels are used to collect sunlight, which converts into electricity, and that's stored into an off-grid battery system for his solar cabin. This is where the ball is going. And once again, if you haven't heard about Tesla's Powerwall, check that out. There are plenty of videos on that and articles online about that.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater. and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively. And you can do this at an age, at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
All right. Now, so that's he has a battery operated house, and that's where the ball is going. People are starting to get wise. It hasn't reached a critical mass basis yet. So if you do this, you'll sort of like be a pioneer, but that's a good thing. But people are divorcing themselves from major utility companies and municipal utility companies. And your house can be independent, energy independent, just like your phone. The common denominator, if you want to become energy independent like the phone that you have, or the laptop that you have, or the tablet that you have, is essentially batteryize your house. That's a new word in our English language. I don't know if anybody else uses it, but I'm using it. Betterize your house, and you'll be energy independent, and you won't receive bills. Other than the only bill that you're going to have is when you re-up on your batteries every few years. All right? And we'll get more into detail on that. We'll bring somebody on that knows all about batteries and all that to break it down for you. And we'll have online Zoom calls as well as offline events on how to install this stuff. And tomorrow we'll be announcing the 40 Acres Club. This is for people who are interested in acquiring land. Doesn't have to be 40 acres right off the bat, but we'll introduce that tomorrow. I just have to put that in the program notes. Now, I want to share with you a story. I consider it very inspirational. I consider this is a trend. I call it a positive trend in the black community in the United States. And I suspect there are other groups that are like this. They're just not on the radar yet. And this isn't the first time this has been done. And, well, it's a group. They call themselves Freedom Georgia. Matter of fact, you can sort of say it's a geographical location in the state of Georgia. So let me read about it. This is on Wikipedia. Freedom is a settlement in the U.S. state of Georgia established in September 2020 in the wake of a breakdown of race relations after the killing of several African Americans, including the murder of Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia. Okay, now, let's see. It was created by 19 African American families who together purchased 96.71 acres of land in Wilkerson County near Macon, Georgia, with the goal of incorporating a city that is a safe haven for people of color. All right. Let's see, history. Freedom was inspired by June 2020. You know what? There is, all right, the two ladies, you want to go on YouTube and type in Freedom Georgia. Type in Freedom Georgia on YouTube, and they're and then look in their video section on their channel. Subscribe to their channel, by the way, Freedom Georgia. I highly recommend it. Even if you're not black, subscribe to it. New towns are popping up all over the globe all the time. All right. If you don't like where you're living, go find a patch of land where you can start your own community and be your own mayor if that's what you want to be. Have your own police force if that's what you want to do. But in any event, go to YouTube and type in Freedom Georgia, and you want to look for the video that's, I think it's about 58 seconds long. Now, in that video, one of the people that they're interviewing in that 58 seconds is either Renee Walters or Ashley Scott. Let me give you the backstory on it. That's why I want you to go to that site, that channel on YouTube, and check that 58-second video up. They started off with an idea. These two ladies who are friends, just one of them's in the video, the 58-second video, but you'll see both of them together, and it's a little quaint group of people that did this, very dynamic. They ran across some land in Georgia and said, you know what, if we put a group of people together, we can buy this land. It's 97 acres. So they say, all right, you talk to 10 of your friends, and I'll talk to 10 of my friends. You know what, that's why another reason why I play 9 friends all the time. So they did that, and out of that, they came up with 19 families that ponied up, and they bought the 97 acres, or 96.71 acres to be exact. Since then, and then if you play, you can play all those videos on the site. They really don't have that many videos on their site right now. And they really don't have, like, really long videos. I think the longest one might be a little bit over 11 minutes long. Watch those videos. Very educational. We're talking about now, they're not a big group at all. Everybody knows everybody. And the landscape is just super fantastic. And they're learning. They are learning how to develop land into, eventually it'll be a town. Because they're shooting, you know, eventually, it might take some years, you know, and they're camping out right now and all that, but I highly recommend it. Very inspiring. Matter of fact, I want to copy off what they're doing. But these two young ladies got together, and no, I mean, they probably had some money, but they had the idea, and they had the location. One talked to 10 friends, another talked to 10 friends. They came up with 19 families who had the money. They got the land, all right? And since, I mean, it's gone from two people with an idea and no money to 19 families to 96.97 acres, and now they're up to owning 500 acres of land. Started with two people. That's it. So I recommend check their whatever you can read about them. They are 103rd. They call it a settlement now because, you know, it's not incorporated. So the easiest thing, if you want to start a town, your first step is to buy some land and it'll be called a settlement. And then there's some requirement, if you want, because some people really don't want to be a municipality. You know, some people just, because when it gets more complicated with that. But they're 130 miles south of Atlanta. All right. They say here on Wikipedia, as of 2020, the settlement consists of a campground, and its founders are working on establishing roads and utility services for beginning building residences. Currently, the settlement consists of more than 500 acres, which is 200 hectares, throughout two parcels. Absolutely phenomenal story. So subscribe to their YouTube channel, which is Freedom Georgia. Now, they have a website as well, which is the Freedom Georgia Initiative. Type into your search engine Freedom Georgia or the Freedom Georgia Initiative.com, and you'll land on their website. They have plenty of videos. They have videos. They have pictures, written information. They have their vision on there. They got some partners now. They have a Facebook page, an Instagram page. I haven't been able to get their Instagram page. They have a Twitter page that you can email them. They have a phone number on there. But that, and I'm calling right now again for like the fifth time, and that the phone number isn't, at least the one they have on there, is not functional. I would suggest email them at hello@freedomgeorgia.com. Once again, the email is hello@freedomgeorgia.com. Email them and, you know, ask them any question that you want to ask them. Okay, I'm calling them right now. Let's see, I didn't have any luck yesterday. All right, when I call them, all right, well, maybe you guys will have some luck. The number that is on their website is 478-375-5755. Once again, the telephone number that is on the Freedom Georgia website is 478-375-5755. Once again, 478-375-5755. I suggest before you eat, well, you can try to call, see if you, because I just called again and no luck. But email them, and I'm going to see if I can get them on It's My House so you can pick their brains as well. But email them, but read over the Wikipedia, read over their website, and then check out their YouTube channel. And what they're doing is where the ball is going. Whether you're black, white, or whatever, that's where the ball is going. People are, you know what it, I'll buy my own patch of land and do my thing. That's what they're doing. And I think that's the best way to go. Now, there's another group I'm aware of. They bought 110 acres, I believe, in the same state of Georgia. But I'll let them comment on that. And if anybody's listening from that community, just press 1-619-768-2945. You can be an inspiration for people. Then I think it's just 12 of them. Just 12 of them. So you can be an inspiration to people that want to form their own patch of land. Because it, if you look at the common denominator of, and there are other black communities in the United States. Now, I'm not talking about a chocolate city. Let me just think, make the distinction between the chocolate city and what I would call a black township. I would consider Freedom, Georgia, a black township. I would consider some other people I know that they have 110 acres. I consider that's a black township. The distinction between them and a chocolate city, chocolate cities like at one time Detroit, Washington, D.C., places like that, at one time, D.C. used to have a majority black population. But the institutions and the entrepreneurs of commerce were not mostly black. So you just had a majority black consumer base. Now D.C.'s gone from 70% black to like 43% and shrinking. Whereas with black, D.C. was not started by a black person. Or, because a lot of black townships started by black families. Okay, historically speaking. Hopkins Park, Illinois, was started by three black families. You know, New Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which now is just a historical mark, that was started by one black man, Frank McWhorter, who was a former slave. Brooklyn, Illinois, which still exists, that was started by Mother Priscilla Baltimore, a former slave. Her family and some other families got their money together, crossed over from Missouri over to Illinois. They bought some land, and they started what is known today as Brooklyn, Illinois. Oklahoma, Tallahassee, Oklahoma. You have some towns in Texas. So Highland Beach, Maryland, which is in Anne Arundel County, Maryland, and I've been there at least twice, that was started by two people, Laura Douglas and her husband, who was the son of Frederick Douglas. They got turned away. They were not admitted to a predominantly white hotel or a white hotel at the time, and they didn't have no internet. Jesse Jackson hadn't been born. You know, there was no NAACP. So they went to Anne Arundel County, and they bought like 51 acres of land, and they started their own town. That town still stands to this day. So there's about probably 800 to 900 settlements, municipalities, townships, all by different names, that was started by black people. Freedom, Georgia is just one of the new communities that are popping up where people want to just be away. I mean, once again, if you look at the common denominator of Trayvon Martin, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, Eric Garner, they're in densely populated areas where they didn't have control of the system. People in Freedom, Georgia, they are the system. They are the politics. They are the powers that be. So, you know, I suggest, once again, check out Freedom, Georgia, and they're the most visible group I'm aware of right now that is doing it. And like I say, you look at the videos, and it, like I said, it's a small group of people, but they're doing something big. And if you think about it, I mean, Houston, Texas, as large as Houston, Texas is, and I've said it on here many times before, everything starts with one. Houston, Texas started with two brothers. Two brothers who bought some land. You know, their wives helped them out a lot. So, all right, let's two brothers and their wives. And look what it is today. You know. So, now, some people might not want to go that large, because the majority of towns in the United States, and there are 19,500 municipally incorporated communities in the United States. There are also unincorporated communities in the United States as well. I've told you about this one a few times. Black Jack, Oklahoma. Sandwiched right next to Taft, Oklahoma, which is a municipality. Taft is small. You know, 350 people, and they might even count the prison population in that part, you know, in that count. But Taft literally is right next, not Taft, Black Jack, Oklahoma is literally right next door to that, and I've been there at least three or four times. It's right there with Taft. They have their own graveyard and all this other stuff, but so there's a bunch of towns all throughout the United States that in unincorporated areas that you're not going to find on the internet. All right. So we'll be back in a few. Open mic, we can talk about battery-powered houses or any topic that you want to talk about, including Freedom, Georgia, because you know, some people, I think what they're doing in Freedom, Georgia, which is fantastic, they're doing what I call do-it-yourself reparations. They decided, you know what, they were not going to wait on the government for anything. They decided, you know what, instead of waiting on the government to give me 40 acres, I'm going to go out and buy, well, they're up to 500 acres now. Start off with two black women. Hats off to black women. Two black women and an idea.
shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
All right, well... I've been trying to get that dude on and off here, this program, for 7 or 8 years. I haven't given up, but he's a hard person to catch. In any event, well, the people at Freedom Village, Freedom Georgia, and their other groups, that we hope to get on here, that they're going out and they're not waiting for anybody to give them reparations or 40 acres and a mule. They're going out and they're getting together collectively, and they're shattering the myths. You know, they're not doing it in what I would call large numbers. I know of one group that, you know, it's 12 of them, and they've got 110 acres. Freedom Georgia, 19 families. Now they're up to, well, they started with 2 people with an idea, no money. Then they got their friends together, 19 family friends, and they bought, the 96.71 acres. Now they're up to 500 acres. So there are other groups out. I don't know where they are or who they are, but I suspect there are other groups out there. One person that we've had on here a few times, Reba Brown out of Chicago. They were trying to, and I don't know where they're at right now. I've been on 2 of their calls, like this over a year ago, over 2 years ago. They were trying to organize to, I believe, buy land in Illinois. So, you do have groups out there that some, and this is what I like about Freedom Georgia, they're visible. So like I said, if you go to YouTube and type in Freedom Georgia, I would highly suggest that you subscribe to the channel and watch all their videos. You can watch all their videos in less than a half hour, probably in about maybe 20, 25 minutes, no more than a half hour, 30 minutes or less. But start off with the video that's only 58 seconds long. In my opinion, that's probably the most powerful video. I think the longest one might be a little bit over 11 minutes. But that's the, matter of fact, let me go to that on my computer here. For me, that was the most powerful video out of the videos that they have posted online so far. Because it's just so simple. Let me see. Let me find it on my let's see. Here we go. Freedom Georgia. And if you guys are online, watch the videos, and then if you got any feedback on that, just give us a call, 619-768-2945. Press 1. Okay, Freedom Georgia. I'm looking for... Let's see. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 videos on their channel. And the longest, well, let me read, this is all short. They have a 58-second video. Watch that one first. I think that's the most powerful one out of all of them. It's a testament to simplicity. Two ladies kept it simple. They kept it real simple. They have one for 58 seconds, another one for 2 minutes and 53 seconds, another one for 1:50, another one for 11 minutes and 23 seconds. That's the longest one. And then they have one for 3 minutes and it looks like 55 seconds. Check it. Like I said, subscribe to it. Subscribe to their YouTube. Subscribe to their Facebook. Subscribe to their Twitter. And subscribe to their Instagram. And like I said, we're working on getting them on here. Let's see. Matter of fact, while I'm thinking about it, let me lock them in on my. Then I'm going to the phone lines. I got to lock them on. I got them locked on everywhere but Instagram. Freedom Georgia 2020. Okay. All right, I got them locked in. And let's see. I'm just saying if I want to make sure I didn't miss anything here. I already got their website. matter of fact, let me read their mission, our mission, and I'm on their website. Our vision is to develop our vast resource-rich 502 acres of land just outside of Toomsboro, Georgia, for the establishment of an innovative community for environmentally sustainable living, health, and wellness, agricultural and economic development, arts and culture for generations to come. healing from racial trauma. The Freedom Georgia Initiative was established out of the extreme sense of urgency to create a thriving safe haven for black families in the midst of racial trauma, a global pandemic, and economic instabilities across the United States of America brought on by COVID-19. Building our communities, our aim is to be a premier recreational, educational, and cultural destination for black families across the African diaspora. We welcome you, your family, and all black allies to support us in our vision to change what we want to see. Anyway, they have a website. They have contact information. So you can get in direct contact. Like I said, we're working on getting them on here. And other communities, because like I said, they're not the only one that's bought, you know, quite a bit of land out here. God knows how many. There might be 100 groups out there like that. I don't know. Or even 1,000. But we should have them on. All right. Other than that, it's open phones. Open phone lines, we can talk about Freedom Georgia or any other community or any trending topic. I consider black folks buying their own pieces of land. That's a trend. That's a trend. And I think we'll hear more about other groups like this as time goes on. I'm just saying. 410 area code, your mic is open.
Hotep, okay. Brother LA, how you doing?
Oh, good. All right, we got the phones working. Hotep.
And I want to say Hotep to all of the listeners out there in the earshot of your broadcast. You know, you have been advocating black folks building their own towns like days of yesteryear, like our forefathers and foremothers did. And, you know, one of the most insulting statements that I hear some black folk make and some black historians make is, white folks didn't allow them to do such and such and such, so they went and built their own towns. Or either because segregation didn't allow them to have access to white folks' businesses, so they created businesses of their own. Booker T. Washington said, and I'm going to get that quote for you, he said, you know, black folks went out and built their own town because they wanted to be in control of their own destiny and they wanted to be in control of their own lives. But we come up with this miseducation all the time. And what you're talking about this morning shows that these black folks want to be independent and they want to be free to determine their own destiny. Now, I don't know how history will reflect their move in the future. But they clearly laid it out. Hey, I want to get away from all of this stuff. I want to be able to do what I need to do without being under the control of the oppressor. And a lot of modern day people, the first thing they do is say, well, black folks don't do this and black folks don't do that. But I bet you these people, like you said before, these people aren't unique. Black folks have always been self-determined and self-reliant. And when you hear a conservative say, well, I'm a conservative because I want less government in my life, black folks have always had less government in their lives. Black folks have always had to rely on themselves and their mother wit and their determination to determine their future. Whereas other races and other ethnic groups have always gotten a whole lot of government help, and I proved that to you, to do the things they need to do and want to do. But everybody give them credit for pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps, but they never, and let me repeat, they never give black folks credit for going out on their own and making things happen for themselves. So I just want to commend those people in Freedom, Georgia, and other people like them, because they prove all of these naysayers out here and all of these insulting of our race to be liars. And that's the one thing I like about their project. And the thing is, you've been advocating it, but you see some people are actually doing what you're advocating. And I would think that would make you proud to say, hey, look, you know what? I'm not the only black person to think this way. But I don't know how you feel about it.
Well, I do. Well, I mean, historically, I got, I'm going to tell you how I got into this. Okay. And it's sort of the origins of It's My House. Prior to It's My House, probably about 2 years prior to me even start having a podcast, I was having problems with this squatter that I had in my Washington, D.C. house. So it took me almost 3 years to get them out. And it was quite a bit of money over that 3 years to get them out, which included me going to jail for contempt of court three times within a 90-day period in Washington, D.C. So a friend of mine that I went to high school with, he told me to study black history. And I started, now I knew a little bit about black history, but I started studying black history. And then I came across the Black Towns Movement in the United States. We've all heard of the Civil Rights Movement, but there was also a Black Towns Movement in the United States where former slaves or even runaway slaves, and runaway slaves did it through the Underground Railroad. What they, one of the things that happened during the Underground Railroad, a lot of runaway slaves, they ran away from the plantation, but when they reached their destination of geographical freedom, they started towns. And one of those, man, what's the dude? The real Uncle Tom. Josiah Henson. He was the original Uncle Tom, but Uncle Tom in the good sense of the word. Some kind of way, the meaning of the word Uncle Tom has gone from positive and good and industrious and independent to negative. Josiah Henson, who was a real person, you can fact check me online right now. Josiah Henson was a runaway slave. He found his way to Canada. One of the things that he did was he helped establish a township in Canada on 400 acres of land. He also helped establish a school to teach runaway slaves a trade so they can sustain themselves once they, you know, reach, you know, that part of Canada. So they learn how to build houses, you know, blacksmithing, whatever they, you know, shoe cobbler, whatever. But he had a school set up for that. He set up a trade school, all right? And then he bought another 400 acres as his own personal homestead. So, and that was the original Uncle Tom, and you, all positive. But some kind of way, his name has been just totally bastardized. And it, when you say Uncle Tom now, people think of something. But there were many people like Josiah Henson who came through the Underground Railroad. All right. So I also came through the Black Towns Movement. And the Black Towns Movement in the United States were basically black folk that did the same thing as he did. They got land through, you know, land runs. Some bought their freedom as slaves and got land, took their earnings and bought land that way. I've been to some black town in Maryland. I've actually set foot in Highland Beach, Maryland. I've set foot in Fairmont Maryland. That's right outside of D.C. I set foot in Brentwood, Maryland, North Brentwood, Maryland, which is about, that's about 10, 15 minutes away from my house in D.C. I've set foot in several times in Taft, Oklahoma, and I've had the mayor of Taft, Oklahoma on this show 5 or 6 times. I bought land and a house in Taft. I've been in Summit, Oklahoma, another black, and none of these towns have had any racial violence, not one. And they're over 100 years old, all these towns I'm talking about. Let's see, of course, I mentioned Taft, Summit, Oklahoma. Oh, Tallahassee, Oklahoma, which is the oldest black township in the state of Oklahoma. And then 45 minutes away from where I'm sitting right now is Eatonville, Florida, which is over 100 years old. And that they claim might be, they claim they're the oldest black township in the United States. Some people argue that. But, you know, that's what they claim. So I've set foot in there several times, and they never had an inch of racial violence. However, and then they do talk about Black Wall Street, which was, Black Wall Street was a neighborhood. It's the Greenwood District neighborhood in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's a 40-acre, it's a neighborhood on 40 acres or subdivision, whatever. That's what it was. All right. But what they don't talk about is there were 50 black townships that existed. Now, that's 50 black municipalities. There were other black communities, double that, that existed at the same time that happened in Black Wall Street in 1921. But people don't talk about that. All they talk about is Rosewood and Black Wall Street. But they don't talk about the other black communities that have been thriving for over 100 years. And
yeah,
now
they don't talk
coming up.
They don't talk about those towns because we don't have a way of disseminating our history out to a broad population, broad number of people in our population. Hence,
true.
That's why we need our own schools. But now I sent you a list one time of over 2,000 black towns that can be confirmed. Now that's not settlements. That's 2,000 black towns. I don't know. I lost it. I changed phones. Mm-hmm. And I lost that list, and I don't know if you still got it or not. But my thing is this, Brother L.A. See, that's why I come push back hard on people that comes out with a lot of disinformation about black folk. Because the thing is, we have a rich, rich history of doing things for ourselves. And a lot of things we've done has been copied. And the trick is we have these people that gets on TV and gets on radio and gets out in speeches and in these universities and everywhere else. And they never really trumpet our achievements. Now, what you were talking about is true. I go all the way back to 1960. I go all the way back to probably 1966. We had a class. And this girl in my class, in fact, we're supposed to be having a luncheon tomorrow. What's today, Thursday or Friday?
What is today? Today's Thursday.
Okay, Saturday. All of us are supposed to get together, some of my class members. But this girl said, you know what? I don't know why we study in history because Negroes, we call ourselves Negroes back then. Negroes ain't never done nothing in this. Teacher blew up. In fact, this teacher, really, I found out later on, is my cousin, and we still go to the same church. She blew up and said, just because you don't see it in these books don't mean that our people have not been doing something in history and been great achievers. And she said, I challenge you to go to the library, and I want you to go and find out something about your people's history. And I had an ulterior motive in mind. I was going there to try to get next to the girl, but when I got in there, I found this book, and it has something to do with black inventors. And all of those inventions were things that we use today that has made right. America great. And I'm not talking about MAGA and the conservative republics, the Republicans. I'm talking about the things that our people have done to make this a great society was in that book. And from then on out, I was hooked. And the thing is, I got into this thing about buying land for my old man because, and people in my community say, look, regardless of what you do, always get you a piece of dirt. That way nobody can't tell you what to do, when to go, and when to come back. And that's what started me on a quest to buy land. And after I got into books and everything, I became a bookseller. And then that's when the knowledge really popped out at me. But the thing that you and I are talking about, black folks have always had to buy their own land. Nobody has given black folks anything. Now, you and I have gone round and round about this thing. See, they tell us about 40 acres and a mule. Well, hey, while we were picking cotton, they were giving white immigrants that had never done anything in this country 160 acres on the Homestead Act, and then they had the Southern Homestead Act. So they got us looking at 40 acres when they gave them 160 acres just to come over here. And if you look at the Midwest, all of them farms and ranches and everything in the Midwest, seven generations have built wealth on that land giveaway. And the thing is, we have a whole lot of these idiots, these black idiots up there talking about black folks have never done anything. And every time you talk, you always mention how black folks had to go out and buy land and all of this stuff. And I want to go over something you said. You say you don't know how Josiah Henson and the Uncle Tom story got out and it's been bastardized. Well, Hollywood did that. See, you had the propagandists in this country, these bigots and rednecks. They know the importance of Uncle Tom. I think it was Harriet Beecher Stowe that wrote the book.
She wrote the book. You're absolutely right.
That's right. But the thing is, Hollywood took it and turned Uncle Tom into a darn cheese eater. They bastardized his name. So when black folks that don't read looked at that movie and saw that he was a sellout and he was on, I mean, he was just a sniveling sellout. That's when they came up with Uncle Tom. But see, that's the strategy that our oppressors use. Hey, anything positive, they always figure out a way to turn it into a negative and have us turn away from it. But Uncle Tom said, I never give my people up, even if it means getting my limbs cut off. I never tell on my people. Sambo was the villain in that book.
You're absolutely right, Sam. When people call somebody Uncle Tom, they really should be calling him a Sambo. But like
that's
you said,
right.
They turned that all around.
Yeah, and look, if you look up the origin of Sambo, that really has a positive connotation to it too. But the trick is this. That's why I challenge a whole lot of stupidity on your show when I hear it. Because the thing is, we regurgitate all of this negative propaganda stuff without doing our research. And the thing is, you got a long history of black folks going out there, getting away from these oppressors and setting up their own villages and their own settlements and their own territory. And the thing is, that needs to be expressed. And I'm glad you bring this out on your programs periodically.
Well, let me ask you this question. Okay, now I know you said you was going to comment on reparations again. But I consider what black folks have done by buying their own land and all this, I consider that a form of reparations. But I call it do-it-yourself reparations. What's your take on that?
Well, see, that's where you and I disagree. You and I told you why I disagree, and we've talked about this. We repair everybody's damage, and we go in to make everybody whole, except the people that deserve it, and that's black folk. I showed you where the Afghans are coming over here just stepping off the tarmac, and the first thing they do is shove $2,275 in their hands while they're getting them resettled. Then they're going in and giving them Section 8 while they're finding them permanent residents. And they're going in and setting up schools for them. And they haven't done a thing to make this country great. I showed you where Hispanics, and look, I'm not an anti-Hispanic person, coming over here, they got sanctuary cities for them. And the first thing they do is they go in and get them settled in all parts of the country, running them up and down 95, all in Massachusetts and everywhere else, giving them clothes. And look, I told you, and I need to send it to you, the government spends $113 billion on immigrants. Now, there's about 11,000 of them in here. Now, some of them work and pay taxes. But when they come over here with just a shirt on their backs, the government is helping them. And these NGOs are helping them. That really is a way for the government to funnel money into them to help them get resettled. Plus, you don't hear Hispanic official or advocate groups say a darn word. And Gutierrez, which was a representative out of Illinois, was raising hell and they told him to shut up because the government's doing what they need to do to help their people. But you see, people like you never get up there and voice your opposition against stuff like that. And that's where you and I have a heartburn at. Now, let me give you this. I just spotted this morning that over a extended period of time, and I forgot the years, the United States has given Israel $146 billion through foreign aid. Now, that's not counting military assistance and everything else. And the Holocaust never happened on these shores. But I don't hear you and your conservative buddies and your black liberal buddies saying a damn word about all of these handouts that everybody else has been getting. But you say we need to get our own reparations, in which we do. You just said earlier in the program, hey, look, you know what? Black folks have gone out there and purchased land on their own and built these towns and everything else. Nobody's given them a damn dime. And when we were released from slavery, we only had the shirt on our backs. And from 1865 all the way up until about 1915, we had acquired, what, about 20 or 30 million acres of land on our own.
Yeah, at least. It's probably more than that.
About the size of Maine or either the size of South Carolina, that's how much we had. And look, we were in control of another 80 million acres through going ahead on and just doing sharecropping.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and the thing is, nobody ever says.
Let me put this out there. Okay, you are right. You got these groups like, I don't know, Florida. DeSantis and sent to bus people, and D.C.'s received like over 9,000 people in bus loads since April of this year, and then they got some other states. And you're right, that according to the legal definition of reparations, and I'm reading right here, restoring of good condition of something that has been damaged, okay? So they're receiving checks. But what I'm saying is, okay, instead of us waiting for the government to do something for us, we may as well do something on our own. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you haven't been listening to yourself, and you haven't been listening to me all morning. We have a history of doing for ourselves. I mean, look, how else can we say it? Everything we've done for ourselves. So now, I mean, you are listening to yourself.
Like you got the Eidos, right, for instance. My take on Eidos, for those who don't know, Eidos stands for the ADOS, African Descendants of Slaves. Okay. In my opinion, African descent is slavery. That political movement. You know, you got them in California, you got them in different states. In my opinion, they might get reparations one day. And I'm saying might because Barack Obama did get elected to president at one time. It would start. A black man is not going to get. So he did it and he did it right. So I'm saying that black folks might get reparations one day. I don't see it in the foreseeable future or even in a lifetime. However, because it's been going on, that discussion has been going on for over 150 years. However, while you're waiting on your check coming from the government or whatever form that it does come in, while you're waiting, go get your own 40 acres. That's what I'm saying.
Ain't the people in Freedom, Georgia doing that?
That's what they're doing.
Aren't you doing that?
That's what I'm doing, and we got other people that are doing 110 acres, and I'm sure there are other groups I don't even know about yet that they're doing good things.
And I bought land. So who says we're waiting?
Well,
who says we're waiting? So now, look, wait, Brother L.A., look.
Okay.
See, that's where you and I get into a pissing match. We ain't waiting for a damn thing. We out here doing all we can to be successful. And to try to do what we want to. Now, this thing about African African descendants of slaves, they're supposed to raise that issue. When an injustice has been done, we're supposed to trumpet it. The Jews do it all the damn time. Don't nobody say nothing to them. They talk about the Holocaust all the darn time, and they're still trying to get things from the Germans and from their mistreatment. So why shouldn't we? We can do both at the same time, and we're doing both at the same time.
You're right.
So now
you're right. I'm not on the Ados camp. I'm on the 40 acres camp. That's where I'm at.
I'm with the 160 acre camp. I don't want 40 acres. I want 160 acres, and that's what I'm out here striving for. Because that's what them damn Europeans got. And look, all they had to do was just get off the damn boat. So I don't want 40 acres. I want what the government has given everybody else. That's what I want. See, that 40 acres got you.
There were some black folks that did get 160. There were some.
I tell you what, you can count them on. You can count the percentage on one hand. Very few, if any. In fact, the next time I get a chance, they didn't even want people to have that land rush. Black folks had to get guns to force the administrators in Oklahoma to give them a plot. So everything we've done, we fought to get what everything we got, we've earned it and fought for it. So this thing about we wait, there ain't nobody waiting for a damn thing. We out here trying to get...
Beasley, there's in my opinion. There, a lot of the Ados, all right, the conversations I heard with the Ados people and the people that are trying to, you know, get the California reparations, and I don't know what's going on with H.R. 40 in the Senate and all that other stuff, but a lot of those people don't even know about the black townships that we've been talking about this morning. A lot of them don't even know. A lot of them don't know the history of black townships in the United States.
That's true. But now, here's the thing. They don't have to know about it. They should know about it, but that has no bearing on them trumpeting, hey, look, we have been mistreated. You're making everybody else whole. And the thing is, we were the ones that built this damn country that you enjoy. And here's the other thing. My thing is this, Brother L.A. I don't care if we'd ever get reparations. I just want to keep I want to keep that noise out there so that our children know, hey, this is what you're going to be up against, and this is what you got to fight against, and this is what you got to be aware of. Just like the Jews say, never again. When you talk about reparations and you have objectors like black folk and white folks, well, you don't deserve reparations. All they got to do is go back and look at the mistreatment and the abuse and the injustice that we've suffered over the time that we've been here. I don't give a damn about reparations. I just want that knowledge to be out. Like you said before, let me finish this.
No, I'm listening.
I just want that noise to be out there because the thing is, hey, if we don't say something, they're already making a move now to erase slavery out of the textbooks.
Yeah.
I didn't want those statues to be taken down of Confederate heroes because I wanted my grandkids and great-grandkids, I wanted to be able for someone to point to them and say, you know what, this guy wanted to keep you in slavery. That's what I want. But the thing is, no. See, if we don't keep talking about reparations, see, all of this injustice and all of this abuse and all of this mistreatment will be swept under the rug. So now if the Jews can holler about, hey, never forget the Holocaust, I want to make sure that that language is out there. And the best way to make sure that that language gets out there is to scream about reparations.
All right, well, I now, think, because I got some other calls here, hold on. But I think the quickest way to get reparations legislation passed is what these like these new black communities are coming up, like Freedom and some other towns, Freedom, Georgia, is because as Booker T. Washington points out in this book, Up from Slavery, and in his teachings, we need to get our economics together first, and then we got the political muscle and the financial muscle to bankroll the reparations legislation. Most of the ADOS crowd going for the reparations legislation now, they don't have any money.
We got the money. We don't have the
money. I mean, collectively in the community, it exists. But
that's
just what I like about these little small micro black groups. They've gotten together and they're consolidated. You know, that's what they're doing, which is good. I believe you're going to need a collection of those people, other Freedom Georgians, to get together where you've got billions of dollars and that's been organized. See, we've got the money, but it hasn't been organized on any type of level.
Exactly. But now, look, I'm going to give you this so you can get to the other callers. Reparations will never happen. Okay? But you got to keep fighting for it. And I'm going to give you this Bible verse because you're a Bible scholar. The rich man asked Jesus, said, what can I do to see heaven? He said, I've done all of those things that you say do, and I've never sinned. And Jesus said, you know what, give up, sell everything you got, and give it to the poor. You know what that rich man told him? Now, this is Jesus. He's the Son of God, right?
Mm-hmm.
That rich man said, screw you. I ain't giving back nothing. That's the white boy. That's the white boy. He ain't giving up nothing. He got it for nothing. He's enjoying it. He's going to keep enjoying it. And he's practicing the rules of self-preservation. And the thing is, if you're going to get reparations for him, you're going to have to kill it. And we don't have the heart to do that. But all I'm saying is with the ADOS people, yeah, you keep screaming it because you have to let our children know and our future great-great children know, grandchildren know, that you know what? You're facing a devil. You're facing Satan. And the thing is, if he gets a chance, he'll do this to you again. And that's what the Jews say. And the thing is, nobody complains about them coming out talking about the Holocaust. And I dare anybody in my presence to dare me to talk about how we suffer under slavery. Because, look, they only had about 4 or 5 years of this stuff. We had 400 years and still going through it. So, no, I want ADOS to keep talking about it. And you know what?
Well,
I'm going to help them talk about it. So now,
all right.
You know, you can say whatever what you want to say. And let me give you this. I don't give a damn how much money you got. The legislation and the mindset of these white folks say, I ain't giving a nigga nothing. And they haven't for the last 400 or 500 years we've been here. You can't name me one piece of legislation that they passed to help black folk. And you can come up with this Great Society program. If you look at the map, it was put in areas where black folks didn't live. You can't name me one piece of legislation that was put out there to help restore black folks or either help black folks in any kind of way. And if you do, I'll kiss your ass. I mean, I'm sorry. But anyway.
All right, Beasley. We got another call here. 513 area code, your mic is open. 513 area code, your mic is open. Hold it. 513, your mic is open. You might be on mute. All right, they might be arguing. Hold it, wait a minute.
That Prudential was handling it now.
All right, hold it, wait. They're on another phone call.
I'm just saying, Brother Elliot, now I want you to give me one piece of legislation.
I can't think of any.
Well, I mean, if you ask your conservative buddies if they can give you one piece of legislation specifically to help the uplift of the black race in this country. I want to know.
All right, well, we will. Hold. We're going to one more call. 513, your mic is open. 513, all right, going once, going twice. All right, 513, we'll come back to you in a moment. Let's go to the next caller, 314, area code, your mic is open.
Damn, Ellie, I've been home since 10:15. And you left and said we come right back and go into the phone.
I came back to the phone just, you know. Anyway,
then that means you've been talking to him. You've been talking to somebody for damn near 45 minutes.
Well, now you got 45 minutes now.
Talking nonsense.
All right, what's your take on it, Pianchi?
There has been blacks got land. 50 acres of land for every settler that they sponsored to the United States. So get out of here with that stuff. What about Soul City over there in North Carolina built by Richard Nixon? What about Freedom Town in South Carolina? Soul City supplied infrastructure, electricity, sewers, water, and some factories. Those that want to do, those that don't. And as far as keeping a reparation, my kids don't talk about that, and their grandchildren probably won't talk about it either. Well, that's where it would end. Oh, it's crazy nonsense.
It's a complex topic.
The United States ain't gave Jews nothing for the Holocaust. They give Israel stuff because Israel's an ally. Become an ally. Go snort your home country and become an ally of the United States where you're in a strategic position to stop the spread of what Iran is pushing, and maybe you can get some weapons. And maybe you, your group, can get some development. What about all the what about these cities that Negroes don't tore up? L.A.? Where blacks had to flee from.
You mean during the riots? During the riots?
Just normal. It don't have to be no riots. How did the blacks get out to Ferguson, Missouri? Did you ever study that? Blacks that moved to Ferguson, Missouri ran from Negroes in the city of St. Louis, North St. Louis. I've named you the area. Walnut Park. Go look at it today. And look at how it used to be. Penrose Park, the Ville where Sumner High School is, where Annie Malone Children's Home is at, and where Tina Turner went to high school. Maxine Waters went to the Shine. Look at them places where blacks used to be. Negroes tore that stuff up, causing those blacks to move, losing property value, after being robbed, burglarized, and jumped on. Negroes owe Negroes reparations. I mean, what do you see it as? Talking about what whites do, when Africans move here, they don't move in the hood. Did you know where they move in the hood at L.A.? I said when Africans migrate here, they don't live in the hood.
No, they typically don't.
but they move far away from them.
Tiaki, you mentioned something that might answer, because Beasley asked a question about legislation. Let me mention this. Tiaki brought this up. I'm going to link this up with a question that he said, Beasley. Soul City, North Carolina, this is online on Wikipedia. Soul City is a community in Warren County, North Carolina, United States. It was a planned community first proposed in 1969 by Floyd McKissick, a civil rights leader and director of the Congress of Racial Equality. Funded by the United States Department of Housing. Wait a minute. It was funded by the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development. Soul City was one of the 13 model projects under the Urban Growth and New Community Development Act. It was located on 5,000 acres in Warren County near Manson and Axel Road and Soul City Boulevard, North Carolina. So Beasley, that was a piece of legislation just for black folks.
Well, he don't know
you,
shit.
I mean, you're talking to me.
Your name
is
Beasley, ain't no one.
Well,
I don't know anybody
wait.
Else that's misfortune to be named Beasley.
Okay, now Beasley, you got Beasley. Your mic is open. Comment on that?
Yeah, I'm gonna comment on it because see. You're entitled to your own opinion, but not your own damn facts. Senator Monahan said that. Okay, now look, I lived in North Carolina during the time that Soul City was given to Floyd McKissick.
Okay.
Do you know what happened to Soul City?
I do not. I'm glad you knew about it. I'm glad you know about it.
But that sleaze, that piece of shit called Senator Helms. They did everything to destroy that project. In fact, Floyd McKissick had a plan laid out. And the what's the guy's name, the black guy that was running for senator at that time, where Michael Jordan said that they white folks buy sneakers too. I can't think of his name. He had laid it out. They had industries coming in there. And that governor, I'm going to get to the name of the governor, and that idiot, that damn piece of shit named Senator Helms said, you know what? If there's one thing that I do, I'm going to make sure that Soul City never succeeds. And that's what happened to Soul City. That's why come Soul City is no longer in existence right now. And then somebody like my man over there talking, yeah, they did give them a couple of pieces. But now that was only two, Freedom Town in South Carolina and Soul City in North Carolina. And they cut that project out, didn't they? Where's the other 11 projects that was supposed to be going on? Tell them to answer that question for me.
Pianchi, the ball's in your court on
that
one.
What do you mean in my court? Kenlock, Missouri was black.
Was that one of the projects?
That the government gave them. Talk about this stuff. It ain't. See, here's the thing. They made it possible. You didn't do nothing. They didn't do nothing to it with it. I don't know why. Maybe blacks don't want to.
Why?
I'm trying to talk. I didn't talk when you was talking. I told you about that stuff. As I was saying, there's been many places where the Department of HUD, they did a model city in St. Louis. Where is it now? Model city down there on Grand Avenue across the street from the VA hospital. Where is it now? As I said before, what about all these properties in areas that blacks tow up, causing blacks to flee and go out into the further suburbs and white areas to live? Who pays them reparations? is Negroes the one that tore these communities up. Hell, anytime you have 4,666 shot in Chicago in 1 year's time, Memorial Day 2021, Memorial Day 2022, who's paying for that mess? Every time the ambulance come out, 463 murders. And you got a damn prosecutor up there who's going to file charges against two police officers who were shot at because they killed one. It's on video. You can see them switching the guns. And where is all this stuff that slaves have been? You know, I'm going to tell you the truth. Slaves was one step out of being primitive a whole lot of. How the hell are you going to build something in an industrial country that you ain't never did at home where you came from? Can you name me? Can you tell me how that's done, L.A.?
Well, they're all in every culture, they're travelers. People go to a place and they see something and they take it back to their homeland and they go from there.
Well, I thought you said that. I thought they said that these folks, these people were dragged over here, stolen, which is a lie. All these lies coming to an end because they're being challenged, because there is nothing more than regurgitated mess that's been passed down in order to get somebody to come into a bookstore and pay their $15, $20 and hear somebody tell them a bunch of lopsided revision history. That's what it's all about. And as far as and black Americans didn't build no damn ancient Egypt. Get out of here with that mess. There you go trying to claim something else. Let me ask you a question there. Is your skin, L.A., is your skin non-white?
Yes, it's non-white.
So are you a Yemen? Are you from Yemen?
No, I'm not.
Well, how would you try to claim something that Yemen's done way the heck over there because their skin is non-white, and you look at them and say, see there, that's my people. I mean, would you do that?
Well, I'm not from Yemen.
Yeah, but they ain't from Egypt. But when you look over there and see Yemenis whose skin is non-lily white, would you claim what they're doing as being your people?
No. Two totally different cultures.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. These people, these idiots have got a fascination with anything that's non-lily white, and what they done, they want to claim as being, oh, that's my relative. That's my Uncle Bob, Uncle Joe, Uncle Willie. Yeah, especially Uncle Willie. That's my Uncle Willie. Get out of here with all that old crazy mess. I build bridges and high rise. I ain't coming to your damn town building nothing for you. You ain't going to pay me. And then all my equipment be stole off the job after by these fools.
513 area code, you there? Your mic is open, 513, if you want to speak. Let me comment real quick on the Soul City thing, Beasley. You know more about it, a lot more than I do, but I'm going from the Pleasant Stephen School of Thought on this. When you're dealing with a lot of government programs, the people that are participating don't have a vested interest. What I like about what's happening with Freedom, Georgia,
yeah,
and these other towns,
that's not true,
is that they have a vested interest. What's that?
Oh, wait a minute, Emily. Hang on what you're saying. That's not true. They're U.S. citizens, aren't they?
Yeah, but they're not. They didn't go out and buy that 5,000 acres.
It ain't about buying 5,000 acres. If they are U.S. citizens, if the U.S. buys it, then they do have a vested interest in it.
I'm going to differ with you on that one. Your definition of is this like
tell me
you,
something
when
that the United States
like
government has not formed.
your business, when you were doing your thing before retirement, you had a vested interest in those building projects that you were involved in.
Yeah, but the Corps engineers built a lock and dam there in Winfield. Winfield, Missouri, and other places. American citizens have a vested interest in that lock and dam.
Well, my definition of it is, of vested interest is, you got to be personally involved. A pound of flesh, you got to give up a pound of flesh.
Then that's not going to ever happen with the common person. Look at your airports. American City have a vested interest in the operation of airports. If you build a private strip, you can turn that over to the National Airways and receive royalties from it because they're going to be used as a private, as a public strip then. So American citizens have vested interest. I fly, I can land at any airport, although they try to encourage me not to at the big one. You got a boat. Wait a minute. You got a boat. No matter what size and shape it is, you can lock through a dam because you are an American citizen. So to say that they don't have a vested interest is yet another play on words that's confusing people, and they hear it and run with it.
Well,
Brother Elliott, may I speak? Because,
sir,
there's
Beasley,
a lot of foolishness going to be around right here.
Beasley, you have the mic.
And look, from here on out, I'm not going to say a darn word until he goes first, so he'll have plenty of time to say what the hell he wants to say. But let me say this. If what he says is true, and I'm going to get to your Soul City question. If what he says is true about African-Americans didn't build this country, and the things that we enjoy today, then he didn't build a damn thing when he was in the construction business. He didn't build a damn thing. Now, this Soul City thing. Floyd McKissick got that program because he was a Republican. And he was promised that, hey, look, we'll go ahead on and make sure you get that land. And he got it. And like I told you before, Senator Helms, and look, the guy's name was Harvey Gantt that helped him lay out the city. It was laid out. They had a bunch of industries coming in there. And the governor at that time, and I'm going to get you the name, and Sam and Jesse Helms blocked everything they did and did everything to destroy that movement. And look, they did have a vested interest. People from all over North Carolina and all over the United States was coming in there because Floyd McKissick had laid out the plan. And the thing is, they discouraged those people from coming in there. And then you have somebody like, I'm here and now, he knows every damn thing, and he wasn't here. I was here. And I looked at everything they tried to do, and they did it to block that Soul City project from being a success. That's why it's in Warren County right now. And if I get a chance, I'm going to have the people that's living there now to give you the lowdown on what's going on. But that's why come Soul City didn't succeed. And then he going to come up here and spread that darn rubbish. So now,
see,
if the black folks
didn't build... No, I'm listening, Beasley.
If black folks didn't build this country, then he didn't build a damn thing. He can't get credit for building a intercoursing thing. And as far as this thing about claiming Egypt, he's been there. He's seen them black folks on the fucking wall. There ain't no white folks on that wall. And there ain't no modern-day Egyptians on that wall. Those were black people. Yes, I'm going to claim it. If the Europeans, if these white folks can claim Greece and can claim Rome and all these other places, I can claim that too. I can claim parts of Africa that I want to claim. Now, let him say something.
Well, hold on. 513 area code, you there? 13? All right. Well, your hand is up, but I can't hear anything.
Hang on. Can I say something? Let me spray this light
yes,
up.
Yes, sir. Pianchi, you do have the floor.
Hang on, let me. I got a couple of areas to spray with this Lysol.
You know what? Go ahead, Bianchi.
All right, now, you know, people say these things all nice and wordy, but LA, you have to ask for details. Details. Now he done went from black people building the country. Now they went from slaves building the country to black people. Where did slaves build? Ask for details to show where slaves built the United States. You got a house in LA, right? You got a house, right, LA?
Yeah, I do.
All right. Did you have an electrician come in there? A plumber come in there?
Yeah. Yep.
They was working. They didn't build a damn place. They was workers on the place. Ain't no slaves build America. And if they did work on, they got paid. How much land did blacks have coming out of slavery? Out of that period? I ain't going to say they coming out. I mean, how much land did you say that blacks have?
Right, was on this program, at least 30 million acres. It's probably more than that, but
all
at least
right.
30.
How did they get it?
Well, now,
how did they get that?
I mentioned like Frank McWhorter. He worked as a slave. He got paid as a slave. He saved up his money, bought out his contract. I call it contract. And he took his savings, crossed over from Missouri to Illinois, and he bought like either 40 or 80 acres of land.
Wait a minute.
So
hold
he bought it with money.
Second.
And a lot of black folks did the same thing.
But hold on for a second, L.A. What happened to the old logic of can't see working for nothing? So if you got paid nothing, how did you take nothing and buy all that land? Somebody's lying.
I guess all them slaves are getting paid, right? All them slaves are getting paid. All
now,
the people you met was a small percentage of them. Now, look.
Let me tell you something.
Don't
be getting mad.
Hold on, wait, Beasley. Hold it. Let Bianchi finish up.
There's nothing to arguing with a fool because somebody on the outside listening to it don't know who's the fool.
You got that right.
Now, you said they had 30 million acres. Now they don't work from, I guess, all of them then got paid. So if you got 9,999 out of 10,000 that got paid, I guess you're going to say all of them didn't get paid. You see what kind of logic and type of tricks they use? These are tricksters, man. You got to be careful, L.A. I think you're a very respectful young man. You're trying to do something, but you keep letting these tricksters, they're getting you confused.
I think we got to put things in context, and we have to. Okay. I think we got to put things in context and put a timeline to it. We also, this is part of the context, like, you also had a lot of Irish people that came, they were the original slaves before Africans. And
well,
when the railroads were built, you had Irish people.
That was slaves before
Asian
Irish
people. And
Africa
black people
taught the world slavery.
Africa
taught the world slavery. And to get on back with this damn Egyptian stuff. The Kushites didn't like mixed people like him. He's mixed. He is mixed. They God didn't like mixed people. He's mixed. They forbid it. So get off this stuff talking about black Americans built pyramids. Those Sultans came from the south beyond the intermediary period. In the dynastic period, they came from the south, and they had an ideology. That's why come when Bianchi went to the down in what's called Athens, Avarius, now around Alexander, when he defeated that king, he came back because it was deplorable conditions that's going on there. They didn't like mixed blacks, what you call today blacks. They didn't call themselves blacks. That's dumb. Africans don't call themselves blacks. Well, he ain't never been out to damn North Carolina talking that mess. Where did he L.A.?
Okay, well.
Stay tuned.
We're going to wrap it up for today. It's 1240 or 1140, depending on where you are.
I'm sorry you had to, and I'm sorry you had to be faced with all of this foolishness today. You know, I apologize for my brother. You ain't apologizing for me. I ain't your damn brother.
My brother, whether you like it or not.
There
all you
go,
gotta do
trying to claim something. There you go, trying to claim something else.
No, no, you might,
ain't
you might be,
got nothing to do.
You might be light skinned, but I tell you what, when the white man see the both of us, he gonna
my
call both.
On Facebook, my picture's on Facebook, Junior.
All right, well, I want to take a look, not today because we're out of time for today, but. Take a closer look at Soul City, because here's my opinion on Soul. What I like about this what is it called, this topic called Freedom Georgia. Now this is just me. I believe when you get the government involved, it's too many things that can go wrong. What I like about the Freedom Georgia project is. These are private citizens. They don't have the bureaucracy. They don't have the, which I think too much bureaucracy can mess things up or dramatically slows things down. They don't have the bureaucracy to hold them up or slow them down or the politics. You know, it's just a small group of people. And I believe they can be successful if they keep it small, because I don't want to go another 20 minutes. Thank you all. Everybody have a good day.